Welcome to Turn a Page, the official comic book club for Nerd Initiative. Each week, the NI Bullpen will be covering the world of comics, talking to creators, deep diving into some fantastic stories, and much more. Now let's hand it over to the team and turn a page.
Welcome to a special edition of Turn a Page, the comic book club for Nerd Initiative. My name is Ken M. You know me as the host of the ODPH podcast. I'm also Nerd Initiative's comics editor-in-chief. And this week, as we are talking, is WrestleMania week, April 6th and 7th in Philadelphia, where the Showcase of the Immortals of Pro Wrestling are going to be taking place. However, it is a Showcase of the Immortals at the comic shop on April 3rd. It is a loaded lineup, but one book that is standing out is the one that is featuring the arguably number one contender that could take out Rhea Ripley, in my opinion, and that's Jessica Haro and the adventures of the afterlife and such that she can only do. And we are fortunate enough to have the writer of this book back on the show. And being the unofficial Paul Heyman to this creator, I have to do a proper intro. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor and privilege to present to you the reigning, defending, undisputed comics writing champion with such hits as Eight Limbs, Rogue and Gambit, Catwolf and the Howling Commandos, We Only Kill Each Other, Black Sight, amongst many others, and the book we're going to be talking about today, which is returning April 3rd, Grimm by Boom Studios, because it is literally the coolest book at the comic shops. If she killed comics, let the pages hit the floor, because if you have this quality of work, nobody is going to convict you. It is my honor and privilege to present to you the one, the only, Stephanie Phillips. Stephanie, what is going on?
Hey, thanks for having me back. That was a killer intro. Let the pages hit the floor.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm just saying, if you are getting accused of killing comics, seriously, let the pages all hit the floor. Because when you're putting out quality work, such as we are getting with this series, with such an amazing creative team, too, definitely have to shout out Flaviano, Rico Renzi, and Tom Napolitano. Holy smokes, the lettering in this book, amongst Black Sight 2, which I don't want to sidetrack too much. Black Sight number 5, the game-changing moment in that book. If you want to talk about a letter making such an impact, holy smokes. So,
yes.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Tom is my letterer of... Anytime I'm doing anything, Marvel and DC, I don't usually get to pick, but anything of my own, my first email is to Tom. So even if it's like months out, I'm like, hey, I'm going to give you a heads up. I want this on your schedule because I want you to letter it. So,
oh, that's awesome. No, he absolutely is crushing it, much as he does with this series too. And let's get into this in case somebody doesn't know. And listen, if they don't know, I'm going to let a pass happen because they are going to have to go run to the local comic shops and buy some back issues and get caught up beforehand. If they don't know what Grimm is about, what is the story behind Grimm?
Grimm is about a Grim Reaper who doesn't know how she died. So all the other Grim Reapers do. She initially doesn't know how she died. So it starts off as a very personal mystery about who she is, how she died, why she's different from the others. And then she starts exhibiting some weird, we'll call them powers, like weird things start to happen to her. That kind of further indicate that there's something different about her. So in her quest to figure that out, we kind of open up this big exploration of our own take on the afterlife, the different components, the different people in the afterlife. And it's a real blend of, you know, there's some Greek mythology in there. There is Christian, I'm sorry, I'm going to call some of it mythology that we're pulling in. There's lots of stuff that we're blending, but ultimately I think it's really mine and Flaviano's creation of different things that we want to see in the afterlife. So, yeah.
No, it definitely stands out too, because when we think about death and when we're dealing with that, this book definitely has just such a unique, and I always refer to it as like a punk rock DIY feel to it. It's not the typical version of death that the public would think about. So when you were going in and planning this with Flaviano, did you want to make a point to do something completely different from the norm, or what was the kind of thought process for this?
You know, I don't know that we ever set out and we're like, let's do something wildly different. It just kind of fell into the rhythm that we're in. But one thing we did want to do from the beginning was pull in music. So music is throughout every issue. Every single issue, the title of it is a different song. So essentially we're building you like a soundtrack of the afterlife. Whether it's like the soundtrack that or the song that kind of accompanies a certain person or a moment in the story. Every issue title is a song. And it even opens with obviously Don't Fear the Reaper. I was like, we gotta get it away. Like page one of the issue, like that's gonna be the obvious one. But we hope we've built a pretty weird, different big playlist that kind of accompanies the story.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And it's such a component of the book, too. Like you alluded to, that was one thing that gravitated towards me in that first issue, especially Tom Napolitano's writing of the lyrics in the snow, which I was like, this is th like, it gives that whole sense and aura of just there's something different. And then as you talk about how music is such, a vital source of even life, like it's just such a nice playoff of the death theme that it really kind of flips the theme like a 180. And especially as you're following along Jessica's journey. It just provides that extra moments that really add to her character.
I was a little hesitant because I think music in comics doesn't always work well. And then once I kind of had a brief conversation with Tom, and honestly, I don't even know that it was much of a conversation. I gave him like a couple ideas, but he was just like, you know what, just hang on, I got this. And it was like from the first few lettered pages, seeing how he was going to handle the lyrics, I was like, oh yeah, this is going to work out fine. Like it's a piece of the artwork. It's not its own thing. It's not a caption box. It's not reading as narration. It is a component of the artwork that's built into the story. And I was like, that is exactly what I was imagining. So that's awesome. I really love what he did.
Yeah, no, it's just an incredible visual when you see it. And when you're going into the writing, like, how do you go about the selection of songs?
Usually it's something that's either about the theme or the character. For an upcoming issue, I won't spoil it too much, but the song is Boys Don't Cry. And it was like, that is the only song that would really go with this story. Like very 80s. If you've read the book, you know that we have an 80s rock star, like hair metal rock star character. And so getting to feature him, and that is the title of like really his focal story, Boys Don't Cry. And really wanting to like, I knew all along, I was like, that's Eddie's song. Like that is absolutely kind of getting, and now getting to tell his story that kind of accompanies the song. I think it's really cool. Like keeping that song in mind while writing his story is pretty neat.
Oh, that's I can't wait to read that because Eddie is one of my favorite characters in the book. And especially there's such an eclectic mix of characters too, especially with the different personalities between Jessica, Eddie, and Marcel. And then as you're seeing their progression go through this, which has been your favorite character to write from the series?
That's tough. I mean, it's usually like whichever character I'm writing as a focus, but probably Eddie. And I think it didn't start that way. He kind of took on a lot more life, and was just pun and not intended, but he took on like the life within the story that, especially as we got to the issues where we're kind of writing his personal journey now. It's something that Flaviano and I built together. When we got there, I was like, hey, here's some of the stuff I'm thinking. Flaviano had a couple ideas that I just really loved. We got to incorporate, which means he's drawing stuff that he's excited to draw. Seeing more of Eddie's band and his lifestyle when he was a rock star in the 80s, and Flaviano just captured it. It is by far my favorite issue of the entire series so far. And I'm like, oh, I think we're gonna have trouble topping issue like whatever it is, 18 or something. Like it's gonna end it now, call it.
Well, I hope not because obviously the series has just been so good, and especially seeing the progression of Jessica as a character and to see where she started from point A to point B. We've really seen her challenged, especially by her aunt. So, do you want to describe a little bit about their dynamic?
Sure. Family dynamics, I think, are really interesting. And one of the ways we pitched this story was it is a family drama where the entire family's dead. Like this is like her aunt, literal demon. Her dad, you haven't read it, like I won't spoil too much, but her dad has a key role in the afterlife. Like this is a family drama at its core where Jess is really like the linchpin. And once she realizes what she is, everything kind of starts exploding around her. What all these people are in the afterlife, their role. When she didn't know, everything was really smooth sailing. And so the more knowledge she gains about who she is and what's going on around her, kind of the more dangerous she becomes to those people. And that is what's causing a lot of the problems and friction. But at its core, there are dynamics. Like we have seen kind of like the brother-sister fight, Jess's dad versus his sister, who is a literal like hell demon.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, sure, my brother and I fight. I don't have like demonic wings and a big flaming sword, but we're trying to, and I think there's humor in it, and we are intentionally bringing the humor to that, which is the like at points we've played with this idea of like Jess having daddy, like when her reflection kind of starts mimicking her and mocking her and is like, oh, classic daddy issues. And it's like, sure, we've seen that in other stories, but like, have we seen this kind of really hyperbolic iteration of the like depressive daddy issues? So, which is really fun to write. Like, we're, you know, I think because we're very lighthearted about it and we're not taking that so seriously, we can get away with poking fun at some of the tropes that we've put in there.
Yeah, because it definitely comes across that way as a reader that you, I mean, you're interjecting so much life and humor into a book about death. And you're exactly right. I mean, the story is just about family at the core. I mean, without giving too much away too. I mean, when you see the reveal of who her dad is and that moment and just how you have that, you know, it goes through a wide range of emotions before that story is done. It just really plays into just there's just something so different about this book. And that's what, I mean, it jumps out to me as a reader. And like you touched upon too, you borrow in from a lot of different ideas. You've mentioned about Greek mythology, and I know our editor at Nerd Initiative, Marty Stoke, was mentioning too. This really shines in the Sisters of Fate, where you see a lot of the Greek mythology tied into it. So was that just like a plan when you were going in, like you just want to borrow like a little bit here, a little bit here, and just kind of mesh it together?
Yeah, things that we find interesting, but there also our take on it. So like our twist on the fates, I think is pretty different. And they feel very animated in a fun way. We wanted them to have their own characteristics and personality, and also use them as a storytelling device. So one thing that we were looking for when we brought them in was a new way to tell elements of the story if Jess wasn't directly present, because she's been such a mouthpiece for what's going on. She's asking questions that the reader would be asking. And if she's not there, we kind of started to think, well, what other element can we use that the readers can start to follow? And our version of the fates started developing from a functionality standpoint first. And then it became like, I love these women so much. And Flaviano's designs for them, amazing. Like how we first them, kind of like their meeting with Harold, like him kind of walking into the drag club is still one of my favorite moments in the entire. That was really great. Like how Flaviano executed it. And it's actually one part in the script where I didn't fully script it out. I kind of told Flaviano, here's what I'm thinking, and I put some notes in the script, almost closer to like Marvel style. Flaviano and I have worked together for a while. You know, we've got our back channel, we talk quite a bit, text a lot. We have recently started doing like voice memos to each other because he's in Italy, so sometimes like calling and the time differences don't match up. But now we've started just leaving like voice memos for each other so we can kind of think out loud and then send the other person like our immediate thoughts on something. And I think it's leading to just a really cool way of working with somebody that I've done now 17 issues with. I think we're moving into issue 18 or 19. And it's like, that's, you don't usually get that much time with an artist. And along with the story growing, I think one of the coolest elements is my relationship with Flaviano growing. I talked about it in the Pen and Ink edition, getting to meet Flaviano last year in Italy. And it was like, this is, you know, now I feel really excited. Like after leaving Italy, we kind of talked and it was like, yeah, you're not just my collaborator, you are my friend. Like you are just a really good, wonderful person, and I am so glad to be like a part of this team. And as a result of that, I think the book is better. So,
Oh yeah. Well, I mean,
so
okay, I'm sorry.
no, I was just saying, it's a really cool thing when that happens.
Yeah, because especially like nowadays too, to get a run like this where you're now, like you touched upon, you're going on issue 18, 19, and you still have the same creative team there and still the same vision. That's such a rarity now almost in comics that, I mean, how is that process going that you're still there, everybody's still excited, and yet you're still pushing the story forward with whatever you have planned and lined up?
No, it's really cool, and I think it's great that we have a company like Boom that's really invested in it still. So, you know, they're constantly finding new ways. I think end of last year they put out some really cool like Grimm concert shirts, which
Yes.
indicated a lot of things to me. Like, one, they're still excited about the series. Two, they're paying attention. Like, they know what we're doing and they get it enough to say, like, we're not just making a shirt with like a Grimm logo on it. We're making a shirt that's designed to look like a tour t-shirt from a comic because they understand that we're playing with music and we've got all these cool influences. And it's like, that's really nice to have a company that is so supportive and gets it. Like, not just doing like the bare minimum of like, hey, we sent a couple preview pages somewhere. Like, they are consistently going above and beyond to support the whole team, to support the projects. And that's, it's kind of a rarity. And it's something that I think Boom sets them apart as a company.
Yeah, it definitely shows up too. Like I said, there are other projects they do. Boom always is doing fantastic work. And especially too with this series, which is really grown, and it feels like a DIY movement, like I alluded to, but even more so like when I go to the comic shops and even with talking with fans, they're getting into it because it just seems like, yeah, there's something about this book that just really makes it stand out and pop. And I think that just goes to the testaments of the characters too, because there's not just everything is based around death, like we talked about. There's family, there's action, there's drama. There's so much in it for a reader to go pick up that it really stands on its own. And the story, it feels to me like we haven't even gotten started yet.
Yeah, definitely. There's we create a big world, and one of the things we said coming into the new arc was one of our favorite things in the story are actually some of the side characters, like people that show up, like the unnamed priest in arc two. I think that's one of my favorite issues, called Absolution. And I really liked that story, switching the point of view for the first time away from Jessica, focusing on a priest that we never give him a name, intentionally. And then in arc three, Marcel gets the focus. So there's a switch where we tell the story from his point of view, and this is what Marcel's hell looks like. And it's very focused on his backstory. And coming into the new arc, Flaviano and I were talking, and we were like, that's something that really excites us to continue doing that. And maybe not just doing that like here and there, but what if we did an entire arc that was told from this story point perspective? So we are going to change point of view every single, not for the rest of the series, but like for the next five issues. And like the very well, we came back to the priest, because immediately when we were like, which characters do we like the perspective of, both like simultaneously, we're like, the priest, like bring him back, want him back. And so like, is it 16? I think it is. Gets another perspective from the priest in a very different way. 17, like I think it was 17, that's Eddie in the Boys Don't Cry story. There's going to be more Harold. There's going to be, I like doing love stories. So, like the love story between Jess's dad and mom, which deserves its whole own thing, and the cover that Flaviano did for that is so cool. Annabelle, like kind of taking these characters that have been a little bit more on the periphery and almost flipping it so that they become the main characters, briefly, and kind of giving them this kind of switch in the story. And that's something that, again, because we have such a long runway for Grimm, that other books don't maybe get this long to stay with the characters in the world. It's something that we get to experiment with. And ultimately, I think it's something that's cool for readers to say, like, this is something the creative team really wanted to do. We wanted to try something really different. I've never done this on any book or story because, you don't get this long. Harley Quinn, I was on for a long time, but there isn't really that moment where you get to do something so drastic, because it's an IP character. It's a character that belongs to somebody else and in a world that has to connect to other worlds and other stories. So yeah, we're in a really cool position, and it's really fulfilling creatively still. So I'm excited for the next issue.
Oh, absolutely. Like I say, with the stuff that you've done already, has there been any idea that you were going to go with, but then you decided at the last minute, like, no, let's go in a different direction thus far?
No, not really. I mean, we've had the addition of some new characters that maybe we didn't account for early on, but from the very original arc of Grimm, we've known where the ending was going to be. I still know what the ending of the series is. That has not changed. Being given more length to tell that story, we might be taking some like little detours or whatever to get there, but the ending is not changing. And that is something that, for me, I do with every project. Once I know the ending, that is my ending, and everything is kind of being built towards this one moment, which is important to me because, even, I don't know, 30 issues in, if you look back, issue one, two, you might start to see hints of, oh, like they've known the ending all along. So we can build up to that really. I think that's important.
No, I fully agree with that, because like once you have the ending set in mind, it does give you, at least in my opinion, like it gives you a lot of room to create in the middle. And really, if you have the time to, you don't feel forced to get to the end, if that makes sense. It's just kind of like you're allowed to let characters breathe in, especially too, like what you've done with Marcel and Eddie coming up and Annabelle. And obviously, there's such a wide variety that we still haven't, you know, really even deep dived in yet. It just is something to really connect with fans too, because if you want everybody to be invested in the story, like it's always great to put the spotlight on the main character. But when you can really have the whole supporting cast connect with the audience, I think that's just such a big win as a reader.
And you know, they're characters that have connected with us. Like some of them, we really didn't anticipate the priest being so beloved by the team. But that's actually somebody that even editorially, like when we were like, okay, who do we want to flip the perspective to? What characters are we thinking? Like which kind of side characters does everybody love enough to do that with? And it was like editorially, creatively, unanimously, the priest. And I was like, he's the only character out of this group that doesn't even have a name. And he has been brought up so many times as like, I've got like other editors at this company, not even specifically on the book, asking for the priest. And I'm like, that's
really?
So
that's cool. Awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I was like, okay, that's fine. We can write about the priest.
and that's so unexpected too, because you would think if you read that, you know, arc, you'd be like, okay, well he's there, but to really have him win over the audience like that. I mean, that's just another feather in the cap of what you and the team are doing, because he's in it for a few issues, sure, but he's not somebody that's really connected to the what's happening with Jessica per se, like as somebody that has to deal with the afterlife and the drama there. Like that, I mean, that's just a testament to the work that you guys are doing.
Yeah, thank you. It's it's a very rewarding book to work on. And like I said, the creative team just, they can't be any better. They're just incredible. So Rico, Tom, Flaviano, they're really great.
Yeah. And then especially now, like you alluded to, there is an ending of the book, but we're nowhere near that. Is it safe to say, like, is Jessica's fate certain then? Or would you, like, death and taxes? Or is obviously we're just going to have to kind of wait to see what plays out?
Yeah, I guess wait and see what plays out. I hope it's something that is maybe a bit surprising, but more than that, rewarding for, you know, going on this journey with us. It's something that to me has felt like knowing the characters before even writing the first issue, to me, it's something that has felt like this is a place I want to get us to, get these characters to. And it feels important for all of the characters in the book to get to that place. So, yeah, I hope it feels like a rewarding read once we get there.
I mean, yeah, I fully think it's going to be, because even like thus far, and the journey we've gone on, I mean, we've seen such progression in not only Jessica, but especially like Eddie and Marcel's story arc, which just wrapped up. I mean, just having those moments and really deep diving into not even, like I say, the theme of death, but even just like the life and heart behind it. Like it's such a cool concept that I can't stress enough. It is just literally a book that it's a vibe. It's an energy. It's like whatever you want to call it. Like there's literally nothing like this at the shop, at least in my opinion.
Thank you. I like your opinions.
Thank you. Well, I try. But it's all honesty truth, because especially when you have something that stands out and really you get a good DIY buzz behind it, which I mean, I'll tell you firsthand, when I go to the shop, people are talking grim. And I love hearing that, because it's just such a book that stands on its own because of the creative flow that goes with it. And just, you know, like, has there been any thought about maybe this, you could see this being like a live action or animated sometime?
Sure. I mean, there's been some discussion behind the scenes. There's interest. I think maybe more from like some animation, which is fine. I guess my perspective on it, though, is like I've written it once and I'm not really interested in writing it twice.
Fair enough.
But I think I feel that way about a lot of my work. And I'm very different from other creators, because I see other creators very invested in like, I want to write the screenplay of my adapted, and I don't write anything with the intention of it being adapted. In fact, I think I'm writing something right now that just like, if anybody was trying to adapt it, they would just hate me. Like I announced I'm writing a book with Brian Azzarello, and it's something that I think like defies any attempt to adapt it. Like it is a comic book. Like this is something forcing you to engage with this medium in a way that is why comics are so cool. And it's not like intentionally like saying like, hey, screw you guys that want to adapt it. Like, hey, if you want to go eat, fine. But no, I kind of have this perspective that once I have written something, I feel very conclusive about the work, and I don't necessarily feel like I need to go write the thing again. So that's usually my stance on that. And a stance that my agent doesn't love. So,
well, no, but you know, that's honest though, because especially too, it's your voice and, you know, putting it out once, it's like, if it's perfect, you know, like why reinvent the wheel? And especially too, with how it connects to readers. I mean, like I say, I could definitely see this being a live action someday. I could see it being animated because it's just that good and so deep of a story that I think it just has that crossover potential to it. I would say if you had a fan cast, Jessica, who would you fan cast?
I think Flaviano and I have fan cast Maya Hawke as Jessica. I think Maya Hawke may have even served as an inspiration for some early designs of Jessica. I believe it was Maya Hawke, but that is a name I know we've thrown around. But I think that's the only fan casting we've done for the book.
No, that's fair. And I could definitely see that too. There is just so much happening with this book. Obviously, you've alluded to, obviously, Grimm is kicking off a big year. Is there any other future projects we should be looking comic-wise to that you have lined up? You mentioned about the book with Brian.
Yeah, Brian and I have been writing a book for a while. It'll be out in August. So I believe like the next month or so, like we announced that we're doing the book through Distillery, but we'll be like showing off covers, art, and title and all that stuff probably in about a month. I have a new project from Boom as well that also comes out in August. That was very unintentional. I just found out today that it's coming out in August, and I was like, oh, August will be a fun month. So so that'll be really cool. But that is one that feels and again, like Boom is really good at kind of facilitating, like I have an idea, I have something that means a lot to me and I would like to work on this, and Boom is really good at facilitating that. I mean, the covers that I am seeing for this are like, I'm very excited. It is a mini series intentionally, like, you know, I have something at Boom that's like very long ongoing, and I wanted to do something that was like very dramatically, I'm telling you this story in 6 issues. That's what you're getting of it. And but I'm very excited about that one. I've been working on it for a while, so yeah, it'll be cool.
Oh, I can't wait to check that out. I mean, obviously everything you've been putting out has been, you know, banger after banger after banger, like Seamus would say. Is just literally, when you see your name on a book, is one that we absolutely have to go grab at the comic shops, you know, no matter who the publisher is. But honestly, Grimm stands out on its own. It is going to be one that obviously April 3rd, when issue 16 drops, everybody's going to have to get and make sure it's in your collection, especially before WWE WrestleMania takes place. Because as we found out last time you came through, you were a big WWE fan, and we have to talk a little bit pro wrestling with you. So since you were on, a lot of things have changed. CM Punk returned to WWE. The Rock is back, and all signs are pointing to WrestleMania. How do you think the build has been for the show?
I think it's been good. I mean, the last few, like, I mean, I'll watch Raw tonight. The last few, like, Raws or SmackDowns, I've kind of just had on mute. I'm not entirely, like, I mean, it's the build-up to WrestleMania. The matches aren't going to be as, like, all-out, so people aren't getting hurt and stuff. I don't know. I still feel like there's going to be, like, one more surprise, I think, before WrestleMania hits.
Ooh.
I don't know what, but I feel like there's got to be, like, one other thing that's, like, gets thrown out there. I know Punk will be on tonight, I think.
Yes, because it's in Chicago.
Yeah, which I am not going to, but I know, which... I love CM Punk, and I know that I feel like that's a very, it's somehow turned into a controversial opinion. Like, I say that to people and they're like, CM Punk. And I'm like, I love Phil.
See, I'm with you too. Like, I've always been a fan of him, but I understand why. And it's because it's the AEW fans versus the WWE fans. And it's like, everybody, we can watch everything. It's all great. So I know fans get like super like protective about it. And I'm like, why? Why? Like, if you like him. And I'm happy to see him back. It sucks that he got hurt at the Rumble, because I was expecting him and Seth at Mania. But I got a feeling he's going to interject himself into that match somehow, some way.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be a very interesting surprise filled. I think there's going to be some switches. Like, I can't imagine Rhea stays a heel for much longer. There's just no way. It's not working. Like, in her last time in the ring with Becky, nobody was cheering for, but it was all you could hear was people yelling mommy.
Yeah.
And you've got a problem. You're like Woman of the Heel faction Judgment Day is too popular. I mean, I've even noticed they don't have her much out with Dominic anymore because Dominic keeps getting sued. And that's like when you have the woman in WWE who's probably cheered the most, which is Rhea, and the person booed the most, Dominic. Like you've gotta something's gonna happen there. Like it's not it's, that's not a matchup that's gonna work long term. So I don't know. I feel like there's a face turn in Rhea's future. Maybe very, very soon future, but
Ooh, do you think that she's gonna walk out with the belt on the big show against Becky, or how do you think that's gonna go?
I mean, if they play it as a fan favorite, I think Rhea should keep the belt. But if they're going to use it as like the impetus for breaking up the Judgment Day, then Rhea loses the belt and it becomes it that could be one of the ways that like her relationship with Dominic becomes contentious. Like if the rest of the Judgment Day didn't help her or something, and she's like, I lost my belt because you all didn't stand with me or something. I could see that happening, and being like the initial crumble in the Judgment Day wall, but
Yeah, no, I could definitely see that happen because I mean she's just transcending right now. I mean she's elevated to that whole superstar level that like Becky was at and Charlotte. Like she's just really trans, like almost to like the point she's going to transcend the sport and go on to do other things. Much in the same vein as like one Dwayne The Rock Johnson who has now come back. And I know he's been kind of a little polarizing too about him interjecting himself into the story we've all been waiting to finish. I think that's a safe statement to say now. Like, what's been your take on that?
Well, I'm not a I don't like Cody, so I'm see, if it was me writing it, Cody would be Homelander. Cody would be like, okay, yeah, like he's kissing baby, sure, but it's like it's too much. Like he's accepting an invitation to some 6-year-old's birthday party. Like he's bringing little kids in the ring. He's doing too much to prove he's a face, he's a baby face, and it's like. And actually, Roman said something, was it on SmackDown on Friday, where he kind of called him out. You're like, you're he's he basically called him, you're just a politician. You are just saying whatever these fans want to hear that will make them cheer for you. And he actually kind of had this thing that I mean, Roman didn't say it outright, but he made Cody sound a little Trumpy. Like you've got this like cult behind you that's gonna follow, and like you can tell them, like Cody said something to Roman that was actually inaccurate. Like said he was the first wrestler to do, I don't know, something to do with the Bullet Club. I can't remember, but it was actually incorrect. I think Seth was technically the first wrestler to do whatever Cody was talking about, and Roman was like, you were just lying, and these people are not fact-checking you. They're cheering for you like you're a politician and they're listening to whatever you say, but what you're saying isn't always true, and you're just repeating yourself. And it's like, so if they made a heel turn with Cody, I would applaud it, but I don't think they will because he's too popular. I was like, that's damn good storytelling. Like all of a sudden reveal that he's been like a WWE puppet and WWE itself becomes this own like evil character that has created their own like the perfect baby face. And he's this manufactured baby face, but behind the scenes, he's just a real massive jerk. I would be like, this is amazing. But no, I don't think they'll do that.
My mind's just blown at that. That would be amazing. See, I've been calling him the Rhodeslander when he was in AEW, just because when he came out looking like that, and I was like, yeah, he's Homelander completely. But now that he came back, he was, the big return there. But I love that idea though to do with him too as well, because I mean, with Cody, I think it's like at this point we have to finish the story at Mania, because I think if it continues on, it's literally going to be the never-ending story. Like, it's not the fight forever we want. Like, it has to come to an end. And I wouldn't even doubt, like, I'm just gonna make a bold prediction. I think he gets some help from one Maxwell Jacob Freeman. I think the big signing
I
sneak.
love MJF.
Well, I don't know if you saw AEW removed all his stuff from their webpage and all the merch. So I don't know, but I would say, like, if he got help, maybe running in. I don't know if it'll be at Mania, but maybe night after or something. But I could definitely see, like, if he decides to start teaming up with him, like, that'd be a time to do something. Cause, like, once the story is finished, it's kind of like, where do we go from here? Because we're so used to waiting for the next chapter to play out. And I mean, I don't know about if, with you, but it's like with me, it's like, I think we're at that point, like, we got to make that belt switch.
See, I would also be happy if the belt, like, Rock turns on Roman, which seems like they're hinting at that. Rock gets the belt, fine. Cody still doesn't get the belt and just dissolves. Like he cracks, like his psyche, like this, everything he has talked about for years has been about this story. And if he doesn't get to finish it and he implodes and becomes this massive heel, that's just like, I hate all of you. I deserved this. Like the very like the heel that doesn't know he's a heel, like that kind of thing. Like is kind of that way right now, and it's working really well. And I like that. Like the heel that doesn't know he's a heel is an interesting villain. Like Cody thinking that he deserved it, that he was robbed of it, becoming very selfish and like disillusioned about the WWE and kind of becoming like a man unto himself. He's just gonna take on everybody anywhere, doesn't care. Now it's all about just looking out for himself. See, in my mind, I just think the Cody character is so boring that if he doesn't make a heel switch, I'm just so sick of him. So I'm like, in my writing of WWE, I like keep forcing changes to Cody because I don't like him, but
I think we need to see that. I mean, I'll see even sidetrack. Does Boom still have the license for WWE? Because I mean, if they're ever going to do like a WWE comic, would you be interested in ever writing that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that would be very cool. And one character I feel like I would feature that has stolen my heart completely, Tiffany Stratton,
Yes.
is so freaking good. What the heck? I love her. I adore her. I also like hate her at the same time, like when she's just being like the mean girl, which I love. She's so good. Incredibly athletic, talented. I love the all pink shtick. Like I just she's when they talk about being mad that WWE is not signing these outside talents, it's like look at NXT. Like just look like I love watching NXT. What's going on with Trick Williams right now? Great. Carmelo Hayes. Like, I think they made some missteps there, but whatever. Dragon. Like, I loved that. That was cool. And it seems to be still, I missed it last week, but it seems like there's still a lot going on with that. So, yeah, it's really cool to see a bunch of new people coming in. And for a while I wasn't watching NXT, and the more I've gotten into like kind of the next wave of talent, I think the cooler it is to watch them like rise up. Like Tiffany, I've been watching since really early days of NXT, like when she was first appearing, and it's like seeing her rise now makes me love her more because I feel super invested in her. Like, oh, I've been watching her forever. Like I love her. Like that's cool.
Yeah, no, she's been a breakout star. Roxanne Perez down there, who they finally turned heel, which I love how they're kind of doing that because it's much in almost like in the same vein as Drew and his heel turn right now. Like that they feel that what they're doing is right and justifying what they have to do. I mean, the NXT roster right now is so loaded that it's almost kind of scary when they start making the call-ups after Mania, because I would have to imagine Carmelo Hayes is up. I have to imagine Roxanne is probably up. If they ever bring up Dragunov, I just need him versus Gunther one time, just on the biggest stage possible. Like that match still, I still hold in my top five of all time. Might even be in my top three. It was just like, that is so good. Except I just can't see him dropping the belt though to Tony D'Angelo. I'd stand and deliver. Like I know that I just can't see it. It's nothing against Tony, but because in my opinion, like Tony
No, it's
has.
nothing against Tony. That character is going to go nowhere. Like that's not working. I think Tony's there to lose. Like that's what he is. And I mean that's what they're doing with the Viking right now in WWE. That guy's he's there to lose. Like isn't t tonight he's matched up against Andrade, right? And it's like who do you think is gonna win? Like I
I know.
mean he's cannon fodder.
I hate seeing that too because Ivar is so good, especially like for his size. But it seems like they don't have anything. And it's like I hate when it's always when it looks like it's gonna be predictable. Like that's the thing. Like when you can kind of throw a curveball, like when they were setting up for the tag matches, and you had DIY versus the Creed brothers. Like who was gonna win to go on to Mania? Like that's literally you could coin flip and see how either team could go in there.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I think part of it though is the character. Like, I don't really know who in the modern audience is like, I want to root for the Viking. Like, okay, that's a very specific shtick. Like, but there's not a lot of nuance there. There's not a lot of like, how are we gonna play with the character of Ivar? Like, we're sitting here talking about potential for the changes to Cody Rhodes' character, the growth to Rhea Ripley, how Tiffany has changed over years, but there's not really room for Ivar to do that. And really for Tony either. Tony D'Angelo, that's a very, very specific niche Italian fan. Like, Okay. They feel very dated. Like they feel like they're from they're remnants of an older era of wrestling, which I'm not saying should be gotten rid of, but there's just less room to like as a storyteller, you look at that and it's like I'm all right, I'm not really that interested in that, but
I still crack up that Tony D'Angelo got out of jail because Stacks won a match in the attempted murder case. Like that still to this day blows my mind. But that is like it's like the most perfect pro wrestling storyline ever. Just like, wait, what? He wins a match, he's out of jail for murder? Okay, reasons. Like, let's roll with it. But it's just like, but that's the one beauty thing of wrestling too, especially when you have like certain characters that really just are so much larger than life. But that's like the best thing about pro wrestling, because you take a look at someone like LA Knight, yeah, and just how he's now taken on AJ Styles, who's more of a traditional wrestler, and just how that's going to mesh up at Mania too. I mean, do you have any feelings on that one?
I don't like Ellie Knight, so I'm just always like, I hope he loses. I do not like him. I have never liked him. I don't know. I've got no feelings on that. I like AJ Styles more. I thought the LA Knight getting arrested thing at AJ's house was so funny because all I could think is like, are they trying to do like when Dominic got arrested and it was like, help me, mommy, I won't make it in jail or
Yeah.
what? And it's like that became such a iconic moment for Dom. And then it's like, but it doesn't feel like that was LA Knight's moment. Like that felt a little odd.
Yeah.
Like that, was he supposed to be more the heel because he showed up at the house and got arrested? Like they haven't really been positioning him as much as a heel. I don't know. The one that I also think was fumbled is the like Logan Paul, Kevin Owens, Randy Orton. It feels very much like a hey, we got these three guys that are super popular and really good. I guess we'll just put all of them in a match together, with like not a lot of thinking. And even Logan Paul was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Like,
No,
and I'm with Logan.
I was meaning to ask you because I know you're a big Kevin Owens fan about that match. And I agree with you because I mean, I thought if they were going to book, and we talked about this on Wrestling Night Live, they should have done Logan Paul versus LA Knight, been for the belt, and then had everybody else do something else, because it just doesn't make a lot of sense throwing Randy in there. And then it's almost like you had nothing for Kevin, so you're just putting him in the match. And then, like, I think they're eventually going to do that title change there, just maybe with Randy. I don't know with Kevin per se. But it almost kind of just feels like, yeah, it's a letdown considering where Kevin and Sammy were last year, that now it's like they really, well, even well, in Sammy's case, though, it feels like his reaction from the crowd after he won, I don't think anybody was expecting, because Chad Gable, I think, in my opinion, had the better story. And I think the crowd is definitely dictating that a little bit. I don't know what your thoughts are with Sammy's situation there.
It feels like Sammy got put into somebody else's story. Like Sammy got removed from his own story, which was really deeply involved with the bloodline, and that got kind of dropped without much conclusiveness. And then it feels like Sammy's kind of just like puttered around trying to figure out what the next thing for Sammy is. And this whole like, I'm gonna keep going because I know I'm meant for something greater. I can't let down people I love. Like it's I love Sami Zayn, and I haven't been loving this angle for him. Like he's so good, and I think he probably should never have been separated from Kevin. Like I think keeping them together as a tag team duo at the very least, or on the same roster. Actually, I thought we were leading up to Kevin turning on Sammy because Sammy was helping Jay, and it's like that's perfect. You're watching Kevin start to get jealous. We've seen this from Kevin before. He's a hothead. He doesn't trust people, and he thinks that, you know, Sammy helping Jay is a betrayal of his friend. And then you lead up to Kevin and Sammy at WrestleMania. That would have been interesting. And then you can have your Logan Paul and Randy Orton, and that's fine. Like, I think Kevin versus Logan Paul was a great match. It was the best match on that card. But I don't know. That's and it's not my circus to run, but if it was.
No, I appreciate your booking, because no, I agree with you. I think that Sammy has just really gotten lost in the shuffle, and it's a shame too, because like he had so much momentum that even when he was facing Roman at Elimination Chamber, you know, a year ago, everybody's saying like, oh, he should have won the world title, and now it's like he's an afterthought. And it's kind of a weird setup there too, because I think that with Gunther, they want him to lose to somebody. And I think the story there is Chad Gable. And I still think he gets involved in that match somehow. Like, but it's just like Sammy's reaction, and you can definitely tell it's like the wind is out of the sails. And I think him reuniting with Kevin, I think would do a lot of wonders. Because especially if they do a tag team again and then have him lose the titles. Kevin is always great as a heel. You set that up for Mania next year and actually really give him some time to do something. I think that could be magic.
I think the like brother-brother match was really should have been Kevin and Sammy, not Jay and Jimmy, because as much as I'm sure they've wrestled a ton together and will be a functionally good match, there's been no real buildup into the last few weeks where it's just like Jimmy sabotaging everything Jay does. And it's like, okay, it's so predictable. I'm not interested. There's actually less emotion in that than there would be between Sammy and Kevin, who have built up this long friendship moving through together, you know, finally getting Kevin back on his side after leaving the Bloodline. For Kevin to feel that betrayed after all this time, the emotional moment of that fight would have been really, you know, I could see Sammy even doing something like sacrificing himself for Kevin to get the win and being like, you know, our relationship has been more important. WWE, call me.
Yes, this needs to happen. We need to put this on the universe. Yes.
Right. I think to be hired by them, though, you have to like live in a specific place. I've looked at this and I'm not super into that, but yes, this is, I sit around like on Mondays and Fridays with a couple friends, just like rewriting elements of it. And I feel like it's one of the best things I do for my own writing is to take these really kind of hyperbolic versions of characters and put them into new situations or rework the cards and rework the storylines. And it's like, it's become like a writing exercise, I guess, or just nerdy fun. I don't know.
Either way it works. Cause I mean, obviously there's so many different ways you can go with wrestling too. And I mean, wrestling is such high drama as well. And when the storylines are great, they're done well, much as the same as with Grimm and Boom Studios. Like I say, it's all synergy there together. And I still think, I mean, my last question for you is, if Jessica Harrell was taking on Rhea Ripley, what kind of match and who would be winning?
Oh man. My instinct was to say Rhea and just be like, I don't know. There's a lot of momentum with Rhea. And I think Jess is maybe a little less of a fighter. She's more of a thinker. And she's got a giant scythe, but maybe no weapons in the ring. So
yeah, we'll have to wait to see what happens with that. But I mean, obviously, Grimm 16 is debuting at the shops on April 3rd. It's the perfect kickoff to WrestleMania. So you need to pick it up and grab it on the way to the show. And obviously, you know, make sure to tell everybody about that. Stephanie, I can't thank you enough for making time out to talk with us. We definitely have to have you come back on and talk a little more pro wrestling and more of the books you have coming out later this year.
Sounds great. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, absolutely. My name is Ken M, and we'll end this like we always do on Turn a Page. When you have a great book in your hand, such as Grimm by Boom Studios, and you see somebody at the shop struggling to find their copy, hand yours off to them. Tell them to turn a page. We'll see you next time.
It's such wasted time, swiping left and swiping right on people you could know. 'Cause anyone who's worth a damn be worth way more than a picture could ever show. You could find the right light, find the right angle, and never find your soul. And it can feel like a losing battle, and this plot is full of holes. This modern way of finding love just makes me feel so alone. And I can't be the only one sick of staring at my phone. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up. Time fable, everyone has just one true love. All I know is you're across this table, and you're all I'm thinking of. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up. dropping right on people you could know.